welcome to Motopop, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 668, where we'll be talking about the Austrian Grand Prix from the Rolling Hills. And with me tonight, this time, on a special assignment, is Skyler. Skyler, welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be back. Had a little summer break, I guess, for myself there. But it's good to be back and talking motorcycle racing. And I definitely picked the right weekend to come back on, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. You picked a fabulous weekend to come back and all that. But before we can do all that, let's take care of the housekeeping. If you like the show and you want to help out, you can do so by donating. You can go to our website, www.motopodcast.com. On the left-hand side, there's a little donate button. There are PayPal and Patreon links. Every little bit helps, keeps the lights on, keeps the show running, keeps it ad-free. I want to thank everybody who's been donating to us and our friends on Patreon. And with that, we shall head into the news. Oh, actually, I should ask you what's going on, Skyler, because, I mean, honestly, you haven't been on for a while. How's the little one?
Hey, the little one is good. He's getting big. He's 8 months just about now, believe it or not. So time is flying. He's crawling around, getting into everything. He's got two little teeth now. And he crawls over to the couch and grabs the edge and pulls himself up and stands up and kind of shuffles along the couch. And I'm like, wow, so you crawl and now you kind of want to walk already. I see that I'm going to have my hands full for quite some time now.
Crawling disappears quick, and it becomes walking because they realize that's faster.
Yeah, walking and then running.
Yeah,
and then
you're in trouble then. Yeah.
All the above. That's right. So obviously it's been, you know, taking a lot of my time, and so has work. Work has been good taking my time. I've continued to move up in the chain of command.
Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you. And now we're getting into stuff that I'm definitely in the deep end where – I'm starting to get things assigned to me where it's going towards, you know, any certifications that I'm working on, so on and so forth. A lot more responsibility, actually starting to manage projects and work with, you know, leading teams and so on and so forth. So that's taking up a lot of my time, which kind of brings us to the next point, which I'm sure some of you have already kind of put together. But this is going to be my last year on the podcast. I'm going to be retiring from the podcast this year because I honestly don't have the time like I used to have dedicated to it. I'm probably going to try to add another kid in the mix here next year as well. So that's going to be even less time than what I already don't have. So getting the show done, like I still can watch the races, but as many of you will have assumed, or if you don't already know, it's a lot of work in the background that we have to do to get this thing going week after week. And it just wouldn't be fair if I'm not available or be able to put my full effort into it. So I've decided after, I don't even know how many years I've been doing this. I think I've been around for about five
Easily
or six.
That, yeah.
I think I came around, well, when I started doing the hosting with Martin, I think we were in the 400s, I think, something like that. So, and then I kind of was out for most of the season when you and Derek were running through everything. So for the most part, though, I've been around doing the show, and I've had a blast doing it. No complaints there. But just like the host before me, it's time to move on to the next chapter. And maybe down the road, I'll be starting up, you know, doing some other stuff, probably looking more towards focusing on maybe like four-wheel racing or something along those lines.
You sound like Rossi. You just want to race four wheels. Why didn't you just come out and say, I'm done with two wheels?
No, I'm still good with two wheels. Still watch a ton of racing and motorcycle racing, but I think maybe I'll be moving into like streaming more so along there, doing kind of like race sim setups and talking about that. It's like a passion I've had for years. I've got a bunch of friends. We're all kind of setting stuff up now and going in full tilt. Now I've actually got three computers I'm sitting here and building right now for everybody. Got something, another hobby that I'm into, but I've do this stuff in the middle of the night because I've come to find I have no time during the day. So most times I'm staying up late to do anything I want to do. So it works out for me, but anything else as far as like being on time for the show, it's not going to happen when the kid is still up. So, but yeah, that's pretty much it for me. I'll still be around for this season, helping finish it up. We're doing the transition with Rich and he's been doing such a great job. I'm glad, you know, he came in and stepped up into the show. to continue on with the great work that everyone has done here. And, you know, it's, I think I've worked with the most
hosts. You probably
hosts,
have that record,
to be honest.
Yeah.
I've worked with, yeah, because I've done a show. I think I did a show, maybe, I don't know if I did a show with Lynn. I think Lynn's been on a show as part of, but definitely Martin and Harry and Dave, mm-hmm. yourself and Derek. Yep. And I've had talks that have been on shows where Scott Bolton was been there too. And then I've done interviews back with Jules back in the day at Tracks, and of course hung out with Jim. So I've met quite a few of the hosts. And when I go over for my next trip over to Ireland, Great Britain, I'll hopefully be able to tag some of the folks over there as well, meet up and have a pint. But yeah, I think especially getting another British guy on the show, we do have a large audience across the pond as well, is beneficial to the show as well. And I think everything will still be turning out great content. And yeah, I'm definitely proud of what we've done here, but the show needs to go on, and I'm going to step away and we're going to continue
on. But you're not going to step away until we get this one done, right? That's right.
That's right.
How about we just go to the news like I wanted to anyway? I thought it was old times, man. I just wanted to go straight into the news. Autopilot it, man. Here we go. So the first bombshell that happened before the weekend even started, I think this was like Thursday, was the fact that Yamaha suspended Maverick Vinales from racing because he had, they say, what, I forget how they exactly worded it, but it was something to the effect of irresponsible riding and use of equipment. So
yeah, like detrimental to team.
Yeah, something like that. So basically what he was doing, I mean, I think there was a free video of it on the MotoGP site. Basically, he was running the bike into the rev limiter, and he was tooling around with it for like the last couple of laps. It was some of the most bizarre riding I think that I've ever actually seen. It was so weird because he'd come out, he'd short shift, say, second, third, fourth, and then he'd hang on to it for fifth and let it bounce on the rev limiter and then, you know, let off and go into a turn. And he did that for a couple laps. You know, basically Yamaha said that, you know, he did it on purpose. He was trying to destroy the bike. Take that for what it's worth. And then he had a statement that said basically, like, hey, I don't know what was going on. There was something wrong with the electronics. It was just doing what it wanted to do, not what I wanted it to do. And oh, then it just, this whole thing has become absolutely crazy in all of this. There's something going on here, but I don't think we're ever going to really know what happens until somebody decides to write a book, and I'm going to buy that one and read it immediately, because there's a story in here that's absolutely amazing. This thing reads like a soap opera, doesn't it, Skylar? I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, especially how this has gone over the summer and how this all played out with him, you know, just shockingly announced, I'm cutting my contract, I'm cutting ties. He already had something in the bag, how things have been going this year, how up and down it's been, and it all just came to a point. But him riding around and saying, like, oh, I didn't know what the bike was doing, I'm sorry, but we're at the level of rider, you know exactly what it's doing, what you're doing, and when you pulled into the pits and just gunned it onto the rev limiter, yeah, man, that's a... Oh, they said, oh, the frustration got to me. And it's like, I understand the frustration gets to you, but this is professional level, dude. And remember, when you're doing stuff like that, you're not affecting how you're looked at by this team. You're also, you know, looking at other teams are going to look at you. So future endeavors, they're going to be like, you know, they're going to be cautious in taking a chance on you because they're like, okay, this guy's inconsistent. And if he doesn't think we're delivering the best, he's going to go out there and just, you know, act an ass. And then, you know, wreck our bikes or get in the media and totally diss us. And that's not how you play the politics at any top level of any professional sport.
So then he tries to put a Band-Aid on this bad situation by on Saturday qualifying, he announced his apology. And basically what you said, I was frustrated, really didn't know what was going on, didn't mean to do it, sorry about that. And that's not going to go very far with really anybody. So it's like, oof, okay, all right. That's wild and unto itself. Because I think this is, what, the second or third time he's apologized for what he's done for different things. And then we get the news of what we all knew was that he had signed a contract to race for Aprilia. Now, my guess is that this contract with Aprilia was signed before his incident here with Yamaha. So that makes me wonder, is Aprilia concerned about his behavior?
I mean, you would think they'd have to be looking at that as like, okay, you know, maybe we want to talk to him when he gets over here and be like, listen, we know you had some bad blood, but let's not do that.
Yeah, let's try to keep toys in the pram.
Yeah, you know, it took me the longest time to figure out what the hell pram was. And I thought the pram was a stroller.
Oh, maybe it is. I'll ask Rich.
Yeah, because the only reason it comes across is I was looking at, because we have our strollers is the Thule one, and you know that's Swedish. So I went over there and I was looking, and they're like, yeah, here's all these prams. I was like, oh, makes sense. You threw it out the stroller. All
right,
okay. Yeah. Were you mad? All right, sure. All right. So anybody else that might have questioned that, there you go. Little side investigation.
So the long story short of Maverick is that he has a contract to ride for Aprilia, but he's not going to ride at Silverstone in the weeks following because he's still not allowed to ride the Yamaha again. And I'm willing to venture a guess, they're basically going to say, no thank you, not on our bike for the rest of the year.
Oh, it's adios muchachos. Oh, yeah.
They haven't said it
at this point,
but I can't see that going anywhere but there.
Everybody here can relate to this situation at any level. When you put in your 2 weeks and the boss is like, and you start acting a fool with your 2 weeks notice, they're just going to send you home. Thank you for your service. Goodbye. That's it. They're not going to let you hang around and be a dick. Like, it's not going to happen.
No.
Like, the moment you start, like, no, there's like, nope, see ya. You put your 2 weeks notice, no, we're good. We're going to let you go now.
Yes.
Sorry, dude.
Why
would you? It's not beneficial to anybody at this point.
Oh, yeah. Okay, and let's look at it from this. Well, this ties into the next point of news, but if Maverick isn't riding, then that means you got to put somebody else on the bike. And the other Yamaha team really needs to figure out who they want, right? So you might as well start giving up some test rides, if you will, to figure out who you're going to use for next year. Because we know now, because this happened in the race weekend, was that Petronas is now not going to sponsor a team. So Petronas Sprinter Racing is just Sprinter Racing now. And basically, they don't have the funding whatsoever to run a Moto 2 and a Moto 3 team as well. And it's kind of sketchy as to whether they really got the funds to actually do a Moto GP team because they're looking for, you know, they're only going to get, I'll get this straight, they're only going to get B-spec Yamahas. There will not be a factory bike like there was when Rossi was there. Now, you know what? They probably only got...
They can't sell it either. They're going to have a hard time selling it because who do they got?
Nobody,
right? They could sell Quartararo because this is the next thing. They could sell Morbidelli because he's our guy. He's been here for a while. They could sell Rossi because he's going to make you money. Now they got nothing.
They got zero. So it's looking grim here, you know, for that one. So, I mean, it's like, was it a lack of results? I highly doubt that. They had some good races in Moto 3. They have not had the best Moto 2 team, that is for sure. Given the sponsor, the bikes, what they had for Moto 2, they failed in Moto 2, really. Straight up. Okay, I will say that and not have any complaints about that at all. But as you also said, it's like, well, they never had a Malaysian rider. So is Petronas really that narrow focused?
Well, they had Malaysian riders. They couldn't get them up into the class because they had Hafiz Siren, I think, right? He came along for them a little bit.
Yeah, he rode a Moto 2, right?
And then they brought him in for a couple of GP races. They put him on the Tech 3 bike or their bike, right, when he came up. I'm trying to remember. That was such – I could see the event.
I can't remember.
And who was – I'm trying to remember. He was filling in. Somebody was out. If this is this is where Harry would kick in. This is Harry's forte. That's right. But regardless, they never really were able to get the talent pool to drive a Malaysian rider on that team, and that's what really was going to sell it for Petronas.
Or having Rossi. Kevin, that name.
I mean,
look, Rossi's teams will never suffer from sponsorship just because he's Valentino Rossi. Just isn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that was previous to this, we knew that Darren Bender was going to go from the Moto 3 all the way to the Moto GP team. Now we kind of know why. He's skipping the middle class because there ain't going to be a middle class, right? So it comes down to, like, who's going to be on the bike? Man, there is rumors everywhere about who's going to be on there. We know Jake Dixon's going to ride. Well, we know that Cal Crutchlow, who did ride in the Austrian race, is going to move to the factory team. So he's going there because he is Yamaha's test driver. So he's going to go over there, and he's going to partner Quartararo. Jake Dixon is going to get off the Moto2 bike and get onto the M1 for at least Silverstone. Where that goes from there, we don't know. There's even rumors that Jake Gagne is going to get a shot on an M1 at possibly Silverstone, which I'm okay with that because I'm a Yank, he's a Yank. I'm all good with that, right? So I don't know what they're thinking or where they're going with this, but they've got to figure out and settle on something quick because they're going to be in real trouble if they don't.
I think they're already a little bit in trouble. I think Maverick was not something that was supposed to happen this year. And they knew they had Quattro. Morbidelli was always going to be an easy pickup for them. But the talent below is getting swept up so quick.
They're on KTMs.
By their teams. They're on KTMs. They're on the Ducatis. And these teams are getting bigger. Like, there's another Ducati team that's going to be big with Rossi's team, right? There's going to be a lot of sponsorship going over there. People are going to – they're going to get good bikes. And Ducati supports their satellite teams. You see that. And with this, especially on these races, where these guys are at in the race, how good they do. Aprilia is going to have a better effort. So these guys have places to go. And they're going to get paid around. And if you don't snatch up your young talent right away, you're going to be in a pickle. What they're doing here, I think, is smart, right? They've got an opportunity to bring some other guys on that look, they've got talent that may translate to GP very well, especially for guys that don't really have something going on next year. I think it's a good idea to do that. And, Cal on the factory bike, hell, I'd say even sit Cal out since he's going to be your test rider and go. I mean, obviously for Silverstone, they're going to want Cal. But after Silverstone, if they're not doing anything, find another rider. Find somebody else. I really think they thought they were going to be able to bring on Raz Galiagou. And I think he doesn't want to be there at all. I think he looks at the politics of MotoGP and he's like, nah. I'm going to be having fun down here in a superbike and just sit over here and maybe dominate for the next decade or something. But I think that's kind of how Keenan seen it too, because he got a little taste of that GP paddock and he was like, nah, that's not for me. I'm going to go back over here and race 600s for my career. I don't know.
This is a stay tuned situation, right?
This is going to provide news every single time
we talk about
this. The show is being done.
So here's a shocker for you. You might want to sit down for this one. Every factory is talking to Pedro Acosta about a 2023 GP ride. Even Honda. Who wouldn't be? this kid is like the next coming of a Marc Marquez, right? Everybody wants that kid on their bike because the kid is amazing. He might be the only one besides Marquez who can ride a Honda fast.
Yeah, and it's proven itself that all these guys that are like, yeah, this is the next thing, they kind of have been, right? So let's look at Marc Marquez, right? They said he's going to be the next thing after like Jorge Lorenzo and Rossi.
Sure as hell was.
And they said, right, Quartararo was destined to be a Marquez fighter way back when he was 15. Now, he had a little bit of a rough patch there, but he sure is
Mir?
Now. Okay, so, right, Mir. This guy went through I remember we were doing shows when he was in Moto3 talking about how good his racecraft was and how excellent. He went bing, bam, boom. They swallowed him up. He didn't have the greatest Moto2 because he was still learning, and they put him on the bike. Like, can he do it? Yep, world champ. Okay, cool. That's proven itself. How about Jorge Martin? Okay, so he's pole position winning races. Brad Binder. Okay, yeah, no, he's winning races. Like, this talent is so deep. Take a look around. Every single person in GP, you go, oh, yeah, that guy was really good back then. We should have signed him. You can say that for all of them now, and you're going to have to take a chance now, or else you're not going to have the next champion, period.
Very, very true. Yeah, the kid is amazing. I mean, he's won 50% of the races that he started in Moto3. That statistic unto itself is crazy. Now, granted, he hasn't won. He did win the rain affected race, if you will, last week. But He's got everything, and his racecraft has really changed if you watch these races as to what he does. But we can talk about that when we get to Moto3.
I think the big question you can ask about him that's hard to answer is, what's his weakness?
Good point. Because right now he doesn't really seem to have
that's
one.
That's what makes him so good. No. Okay, so we'll start him in pit lane, back to the pack. Okay, win. Sure. All right, so we'll put in the rain. Okay, win. Sure. We're going to put you on tracks you don't even know. Okay, sure. Win. We're going to put you against guys that have been doing this for years. Okay, cool. Win. All right, we're out of ideas. You got to go to Moto 2. That's what it's at. This guy, there's nothing left in Moto 3 for him at all.
Yeah, Rich and I were on that last week. He's like, what's the point of him staying? I don't care. You threw the best in the world on a Moto 3 bike at the kid. He went, okay. Done that. Can I go ride in the Moto 2 bikes, please? Just all out of this. Oh, let's end this on a happy note. Rossi is going to be a dad. Him and his girlfriend, Francesca, are expecting a baby girl. Congratulations to Mr. and Mrs. Rossi. Or Mr. and Mrs. Goat, I guess we should say, right?
Right. Do you think this, I mean, it'd be silly to say he didn't weigh this in his decision, but a lot of these guys, especially someone like Rossi, who has nothing really stop him from racing. I'm guessing it's a cumulative at this point, huh? Father time, becoming a father as well, and just not seeing the results. I would assume all of this must have quit, but I wonder if the kid really just like pushed him. He's like, I could do another year on a bike. I could, but maybe I don't need to.
I don't know. I think this was coming because Rossi was developing his own team. He was dealing with all the politics of that. He was dealing with all that. And he hasn't ruled out doing a wild card here or there.
I think his big thing is Rossi's always been a guy who has fun on a motorcycle, and he's not having fun. And that anyone that's that joyful and enjoys something that much, when they can't enjoy it anymore, they're just like, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. this isn't it for me. Because he's not gonna stop racing. He's gonna be four wheels. So I guess yeah, it's probably what you were saying there. Not so much. He's had enough.
I mean, what does he have to prove? Nothing. I mean, he's easily going to be one of the five greatest to ever throw a leg over a motorcycle. I mean, we can argue left, right, and center who the other four are going to be in there, but everybody's going to have him in their top five.
Yeah, he's on the motorcycle Mount Rushmore for sure.
And then, we could argue who else goes up there. But anyway, I think that's it for the news. I don't have anything else. You got something more that I maybe want to sneak in here that I don't know about, didn't see?
No, I think we'll burn through our Moto 3 and Moto 2 because we really got to talk about that GP race. And we're, in typical fashion, 20 minutes in and just yabbing about the news.
It's a classic show, right? That's how it works. All right, man, let's just do some Moto 3 qualifying here real quick just to set the scene for the race. In that first QP session was Minyo Toba, Tatai, Koffler, and Arenas, along with Salvadori and Fernandez. Then Fernandez high-sided at turn one, and the bike flipped over on top of him, and I went and cringed because I was thinking foot peg in the back or, like a handlebar in the back with some big bruise, that kind of thing. He got up, and everything was nice there. I'm sure he was battered and abused a little bit. But Minyo missed out on going through as Rossi, Tatai, Nepa, Toba go on. And then we get to QP2, and then Rodrigo takes out Suzuki. After Suzuki had put a lap on the board that was pretty damn amazing, and poor Rodrigo had problems in FP3 when he took Yakanama out, who broke his humerus bone, and so he can't ride this week at all. So he wound up having what was going to be a pit lane start for that incident with Yamanaka became a pit lane start and a long lap penalty because of what he did to Suzuki. But everybody took their shot at Suzuki, and the only person who could knock Suzuki off that pole time that he had set early on was Fanati. And so qualifying ran out as Fanati, Suzuki, Alcoba on the front row, Masia, Anshu, Sasaki taking the second row. Acosta was seventh, then Rodrigo, who would then, of course, go start pit lane and have the long lap penalty. Foggia on the third row, then Nepo, Guevara, Rossi, Toba, Garcia, McPhee, Tatai, Salak, and Darren Binder rounding it out from that qualifying session. So we'll move on to the actual race. Now, the race was somewhat interesting. It was Fanati Anchu, who was looking good again this week. Sasaki, Suzuki, and Acosta was fourth. Mino crashed at the beginning. He had a little help from his teammate, Salvadori, so I'm sure that was going to be a good talking and a nice fun car ride back to the hotel after that one. You know, but then Pedro has again kind of changed his, as we're talking about, kind of changed his race strategy. We had the big tracks with the drafting, with the Mugello, the Barcelona, those kind of tracks. He kind of wanted to ride around in the pack a little bit. He was always sort of at the back of the pack or in the middle of the pack. And when he would make a charge up to the front, he couldn't break away. And everybody would swing right by him again, and he would fall straight back in. So he didn't have that timing or that rhythm. So he decided, well, I'm just going to attack all the time now. So he attacked and went to the lead early on. But then Anchu and Fanati go by. And then, you know, it kind of becomes your normal Moto3 race. Everyone looks strong. Nobody can figure out who could win or would win. It's all big gathering of bikes. So then Foggia and Garcia have joined the leading pack of Anchu, Fernandez, and Pedro. And then Sasaki goes down at turn 10. And he had a little help from Binder, but there was no action taken. Now, Binder had a gap. Binder went for it. Sasaki was on the wrong side of that wreck. There was no call from race direction on that at all. I felt like that was okay. Do you disagree with race direction on that one, Skyler?
I mean, racing incident. You start saying you can't do that. I mean, this one was just a coming together of lines and being in each other's blind spots a little bit. Unfortunately, the rider who always is going to go down is going to feel they definitely got wronged. I didn't see a harsh move here. I just saw both were sticking to lines that they both could have successfully made. It's just racing incident and the most definition I could think of it.
Well, Fanati then got roughed up by Garcia and Masia. Now, Garcia, who had been good last weekend, was being very good again, but it was becoming a little bit of a train of Anchu, Acosta, Masia, Garcia, Fanati, and Foggia. They had about 7/10 of a second to Binder, and it looked like that those front five were going to pull away, and that was going to be that. Well, that wasn't going to happen because it's Moto 3, right? But Fanati wound up going around the outside of turn 9 to go from like third to first, which was one of the best moves I've seen in a long time. I mean, that's downhill, it's off camber, and you're riding around the outside of guys. That's pretty damn impressive, to be honest with you.
It was a theme of the weekend, that's for sure.
That might have been pass of the weekend, honestly, because that was pretty wild. Let's see, what was going on after that? Pedro wound up getting a track limits warning. Like, who doesn't get a track limits warning here in Austria? I feel like everybody gets one, at least somewhere along the way.
Yep.
And then it looked like Anchu was going to break away because he was back to the front. He had like 4/10, but it was like, nope, everybody else decided to get their act together, brought it back up, and it was Anchu, Masia, Acosta, Gardner, and Fanati. Those were going to be the people who were going to be in it for the win in the podium. There was nobody else there. Garcia, with three laps to go, now leads, and he was there. Then it was Anchu and Pedro went back by. Foggia was too deep into turn 3. Pedro had run deep at turn 1, and that was his chance to win, and that was gone for him. Anchu will cut back underneath of him, and then Garcia goes deep. And I mean, he went way deep to get underneath of Pedro and Anchu at turn 9. And then here comes Foggia along for the ride, too. And then it's back forth. Is it Pedro? Who's it going to be? But as it sorted itself out in the final lap, it was Garcia who won, Anchu, and Foggia being the final podium. Acosta just missed out on that going there. Then it was Fanati, Masia, McPhee, Guevara, Binder, Toba, Suzuka, Salach, Nepa, Alcoba, and the last point scorer was Isdan Har. It was a very good Moto 3 race. I enjoyed it. You're yourself, Skyler. I'm sure you probably liked that one too.
Yeah, it felt like a wind-up race. We didn't have Jim's favorite word. We didn't have the chaos in the beginning like we've come so used to seeing with Moto 3 and it being a real big pass fest, because the same six or seven guys were freight training around the front for the most part, and just there would be a pass here and there. But around about four laps, that's when they decided, after they've been winding it up for the whole race, to just let it go. You started seeing people run wide. I could even put notes in here that looked like Fanati was having a little extra hard time because he was running wide in every corner, and he looked like he was losing grip. So he was starting to slip back. And then everyone who looked solid no longer looked. They were all on the edge of their abilities. But this was a fun one to watch. Finally, though, it was a Moto3 race I could actually take notes on. So that was a nice change.
The chaos had not developed. It was refrained, and it was actually racing with strategy. And I think a lot of it has to do with this track. It's not the swoopy, fast sections like Mugello. It's not a big, long straightaway with three sweeping turns leading onto that straightaway that kind of collects everybody and puts them together. This is about who's dares to break latest, but the turns that you're breaking into are incredibly slow. They're like probably second gear turns in a Moto 2 or a Moto 3 gearbox. And so it's, how do you get into the turn? How do you accelerate out of the turn? Which is going to be, because there's not a draft when you're going that slow. Whereas on the other tracks with the big sweeping turns, there's a bit of a draft going and everybody kind of hooks up in there. So definitely the track plays a little bit into it, but I did like that Pedro's strategy was attack, 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 stay in the front. If you get past, pass back if you can. If not, stay right there with them, then pat, and then try again on the track somewhere else. Although Pedro was really good at that turn six area, going in shallow and somehow holding the line and carrying speed, which was impressed me a lot. So let's look at the championship standings. It's no surprise that in the championship that Pedro Acosta is leading the championship still. He has 196 points. Garcia has now made it 155. So that still puts him 41 points behind Pedro Acosta. This is the kids to lose. I don't see anybody. I don't see Garcia catching him. Fanati is third, then Foggia, Masia, Binder, Sasaki, Antonelli, Toba, and Jeremy Alcoba is in the top 10. Realistically, since Fanati is like 83 points shy roughly of the lead, I don't see him making that up unless something catastrophic happens. It's a race between Acosta and Garcia, with the nod definitely going towards Acosta right now. He probably has four fingers and getting ready to put a thumb on the winner's trophy for the championship. Anything else, Skyler? We'll move on to Moto 2.
No, I think it, like you said, this championship is, we'll watch who's going to get second place, and we'll keep an eye on where Pedro Acosta is going to go next year.
we'll sit back and watch and see where that one happens. I think Pit Beyer might be throwing some massive Red Bull money and a long, long-term contract at that kid. So we shall see.
But yeah, even they might, but if I was Pedro's manager, I'd be like, no, you're going to do short terms because everybody's coming. And if anything, we're going to make them all keep pushing that contract up. So hopefully he's got good management that's looking out for him, but in the best way.
I agree. Moto 2, looking at qualifying. So Arenas, Virahe, Dixon, DG Antonio, Gartho, Roberts, Arbolino, and Cam Bobier are all in that first session. And Arenas goes down at turn six. People were slow ahead, but he just sort of crashed on his own. It was like the track had people dawdling, and like maybe he looked up and saw it out of the corner of his eye, corner of his vision, and maybe grabbed the front just a little too much. But nobody helped him, and originally I thought somebody had. But it works out that Manzi is fast. He's waiting it out in the pits, and we've seen him do this before, and it's actually cost him ability to go through. But this time it worked out for him because he, Dixon, DG Antonio, and Baliga all go through into that second session. In the second session, we had Bezzecchi. He crashed at turn nine after having a great weekend. The weekend prior, he crashes. Great. Agüero looked really good. He was fast. He was quick. He was in front of Lowe's. By halfway, half the session done, Agüero was fastest, followed by Lowe's, Canet, Adrian Fernandez, Chantra, and De La Porta. Then Remy had gone down at turn one. So that was the first kink in Remy's armor, I would say, was that there. But Lowe's had a very good lap. Raul Fernandez came from nowhere to be second on the grid. Then Agüero was third. I tell you, I am so impressed with Agüero in this class right now. He has come on like wildfire. Then Augusto Fernandez, Remy Gardner, who would still be fifth. Then Canet, Chantra, Vietti, Delaporta, Luthi, Schroeder, and that's your top 10 right there. So we were looking forward to the race. It was super hot when the Moto2 race took place. And quite honestly, this one's a bit of a snooze fest. Wouldn't you say, Skyler?
Sorry. I hit the mute because I had sneezed a bit ago and I realized I never turned myself back
on. Well, you are rusty. I mean, we're going to have to give you that one.
I mean, you had a chance, though. You should have been like, oh, it was a snooze fest, right, Skyler? Nothing. You'd be like, see, exactly. He even fell asleep listening to me talk about it.
I was just talking about qualifying. I didn't even got to the race yet. So this Moto2 race, it was blazing hot when they took off. Lowe's got the whole shot followed by Raul Agura, Fernandez, Garthau, and Bezzecchi was all the way down and Gardner was down in 10th. Gardner had an absolutely horrid start. This is the first time Gardner has never gotten the bike off the line properly. I don't know what had happened there. I don't know if it was a clutch issue or, you know, just, you know, you flub one every now and then. You can't be perfect all the time on the lights. Bezzecchi was in 11th. Basically, Raul took off. He got out front of Lowe's. And that was pretty much, I think, anybody was really going to see of Raul. He basically would just kind of scooter on out front, and he would take the win. Now, there was a pretty good little bit of a race for the second place, and that was between Agüero, Fernandez, and Lowe's. Lowe's had the upper hand early on in this, but he wasn't able to maintain the pace that he had. He simply just didn't have it at the end, whether the tires went off or he, you know, was just looking to actually get a finish instead of actually falling off like Lowe's has done way too many times this year. And you know, that's always possible. But what did come about it was that Agüero would beat everybody to get second. Fernandez would get past Lowe's and finish on the podium for top three. Then you had Lowe's. Then after that, you had Chantra. Now, this is one of Chantra's best finishes that he's had. I think he's done this before. I think he's been fifth before, and I think he's done it in Austria. Some reason he clicks on this track and he goes like wildfire there. Then you had Celestino Vietti, who had a good race as well. He had a good race the prior weekend. He had a good race this weekend. He needs to qualify a little bit better, be a little farther up on the grid, and then he would be able to be there at the end because he's showing the pace. He's just not there quite yet. But Gardner couldn't get a grips on things. I think it was so hot that it just didn't work for his setup or whatever tires that he had on. He really couldn't go anywhere, but he did what a champion does. He tried to take as many points as he possibly could, and he did that by finishing seventh in the list. Kennett was right there with him, you know, the speed up or the Bussacora. It's hit or miss on whether it works on this track at this time with this temperature, and no one can seem to figure that one out. Then you had Luthi and Bezzecchi finishing out the top 10. Jake Zixon was 11th. DG Antonio had Lonely Ride to 12th. Arbolino 13th. Xavi Verhey 14th. And then Hector Garzo finishing up in 15th and getting the final point. Is there really anything else you want to say about this one, Skyler? So now you fell asleep. No, now you fell asleep.
I was just going to say, how do I say this? But no, there really isn't anything else. The race was a very straightforward race, right? You get in, and after about lap six, it's like, okay, cool. I'll see you at the end. And that was pretty much it.
It was like a typical Moto2 race this time, finally. Like, okay. There have been some good Moto2 races this year. There's been some fantastic ones.
You know what I will talk about, though? And it's to go along with what you said, is Iagura has really surprised me. He was quick in Moto3, but I did not expect him to adapt so quickly to Moto2. And he's not riding over his head either.
It's measured.
He's just getting better and better and better. And he is going to be a real threat next year in this class. And if they don't figure him out soon, he's actually going to start pulling away from them next year, much like Fernandez is doing to them this year, unless Acosta has something to say about
that. Here's the thing with Fernandez, or with Agüero and Fernandez. If Fernandez was not in this class, we would do nothing but talk about Agüero.
This is a good point.
I mean, it just so happens that these two are rookies to this class, and it just so happens that Fernandez came on strong at the beginning, and then I think his mental game got trashed.
Well, we talk about Remy too.
Well, that's true.
Let's not. I mean, he's the champion.
Right, but Remy had been in the class for longer. He wasn't a rookie in the class, It, but
he's not the
yes,
revelation.
but we are finally seeing what talent Remy has, because he's finally on a good bike with a good team, and he has grabbed that that bull by the horns and has showed us that he is deserving of a MotoGP ride, which he will have next year in the Tech 3 team. I mean, I think he's like his dad. The bigger the bike gets, the better he's going to ride, and he's definitely not going to be on a slouch team in MotoGP. And I think if he is smart about it, puts in the time, he'll be fine in that class, but we'll see what happens next year.
What is the cumulative age of KTM next year?
12.
That is a young I mean, we'll have to look that up. That'd be a fun one to do, because these teams, I mean, and of course the median is going to go down significantly
with Rossi,
next year, because with Rossi leaving, right? And that puts,
you have to send me that spreadsheet so I can do the calculations. You had it, you just never sent it to me, so I'm laughing.
Yeah, but we did that, and then I'll have to look that up. I'm pretty sure it's somewhere. But that's got to leave like guys like Aleix Espargaró is one of the oldest guys in
probably,
the paddock now. It's Ical already left too. And it's wild. I think it might be, I'd have to look, because Maverick is, he's 20. I think he's like 28.
Yeah, I think he's 28.
Zarco
would be the
too.
Oldest, wouldn't he? Because Zarco's in his 30s.
Yeah, I think
Zarco is going to be your oldest guy on the grid.
Because everybody else, dude, there's a lot of sub 25 in MotoGP. Which is wild. And there's a lot of sub like 23 in MotoGP, which is wild too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You forget how young. We'll talk about it later, but it's just, it kind of blows my mind with these guys.
Dude, it's 42 minutes and we ain't even talked about MotoGP yet. We got to get into it. Moto2 championship standings. I haven't done it real quick. Even though Gardner finished 7th, he still leads the championship. He has 206 points. His teammate now has 187. Bezzecchi is still 3rd. Lowe's, Canet, Fernandez, DiGiantoni, Agura, Schroeder, and Verhey wind out your top 10. All right, let's get to MotoGP. I've been waiting for this because this race is fantastic. But let's hit the qualifying here real quick. First MotoGP.
Ivan, I could do the qualifying in this one. You could take the reins on the, on right, the old racer there. All right, so Q1, we had excitement down to the end of this. We really didn't know who was going to get out of this, because all weekend long we kind of had a different mix of weather, different track temps. So by the time Q1 came around, and it was really anybody. And Jim, we've said this all year. Everyone was going to spend some time down in Q1, and that wasn't even really a knock against you, because it's so hard to make it to Q2. But the problem is when you're Q1 and there's only two spots up, there's just about 5 to 6 guys every single time you get down there that are going to be going for those spots. But at the end, we had Martin coming out of there and Oliveira, who really didn't have a whole lot of pace, but then turned it on just when he needed to in Q1 to get over into Q2.
So now we get to understand, Martin, to be the fastest guy in Q1, threw down a 123.197, which was damn near lap record pace.
Yes, so he was definitely letting us know. And this is after he had a crash in FP4, I think, right? Yeah, so I think it was, 30 minutes before he had to do this lap. So kudos to that team for getting his bike going. It wasn't a real big crash, but it was big enough where they had to put in some good amount of work there. So we get to Q2. Now, Q2 we knew was going to be some hot laps. And with the way the track conditions are going and seeing how Martin was almost on to the lap record pace, we knew we were going to see some come out and finally get that sub 123 time. It didn't take long. In fact, it was Fabio Quartararo said it on his second flying lap of qualifying, gets up there and slams it down yet again. And he almost Casey Stoner'd it, goes up there, sets it, goes back in the pits and, all right, y'all, see if you can catch up to me. And it didn't look like anyone was going to catch him for a while. But once everyone started getting wound up, you started seeing red helmets or red lights kind of go around the whole track. Like, all right, here we go. We're setting times. And then at the end, Martin was looking real strong. And then he just put all of it together. He put all of his sectors together, put down the power, and grab pole. Again, I think the top three people actually had, there were the top three laps, which one by Martin and two of them by Quartararo were all sub lap record. So they were all now on the lap record. Martin setting the fastest lap around the Red Bull Ring there at a 122.643. I think it's the third time ever someone's come out of Q1 and taken pole. Yep. So what an effort by Martin to be able to go down in FP4, regroup mentally to come back out and throw it down like that. And that says a lot going for him and his career. Is he going to erase things that fast? He's going to do
yes,
well.
Yes, he is. So two interesting takes from qualifying. First interesting take, Marc Marquez was not looking for a toe from anybody this time, which shows that Marquez is getting faster but may not be completely mm-hmm. there yet, which we'll talk about in the race. And second thing of interest, there were three Hondas for the first time this year in Q2.
I didn't even notice that. That's good.
Because Marquez was there, Espargaro was there, and you had Nakagami. So you had three Hondas in the second qualifying session. Yeah, so that was definitely things to look to see. And so, yeah.
But is that a sign of improvement, or is that a sign of a track that is suitable to the Honda in the way that's designed right now? I guess we'll find out.
I go with a little bit of both, because you have a track that's stop start, so it's acceleration and top speed, mm-hmm. something the Honda is good at, but you got to be late on the brakes, which is not what the Honda is really known for, because it gets kind of squishy on the front. So I think they're progressing with the bike a little bit, and maybe this is where Jenny Anderson is starting to help, because they're starting maybe here. She's got enough data to look at it and see that there's a different path that they need to take. Or it's just the idea that now everybody's becoming far more familiar with the new front tires that have been brought out, that at the beginning of this year, KTM hated it and built a whole new chassis to fix. So are there parts and pieces on the Hondas, you know, maybe some carbon fiber bits that bolt on that either stiffen the chassis, or they've done other things to maybe make it flex? Who knows which way they've gone, but maybe there's some bits and bobs that are helping us there. I just think it's interesting that Marquez was not waiting and looking for anybody for a toe. I think that was a telling statement to me. That doesn't mean that he's back, but it means that he at least feels confident enough that he can go for it. So all of it was to play for, though, on race day. The predictions from last week was there was going to be rain. We got it. We got it for the Moto 3 race early in the day. The forecast from Saturday for the Sunday race was, by the time MotoGP grids up at 2:00, it's going to be pouring down with rain. The question was it really going to rain? And as they're sitting on the grid, it kept looking like it was going to rain. It started to get dark. Simon Crafer said it was dark. And it got really dark. It got so dark that you noticed that it was dark on the camera, because the cameras make it look lighter than what it actually really is. So if it looked dark on camera, it was really dark when it was there. They declared that this race was going to be a dry race from the beginning. There were spots of rain that were on the visors of the riders as they were getting ready to go do their sighting and, well, the warm-up lap. But just before that happened, Marc Marquez put a soft rear tire on instead of the mediums that everybody else was on. So did Marquez think, Simon Crafer said, hey, Marquez thinks there's no way this race is not going to go flag to flag with a bike change. So there's no need to be on a medium tire. I need to be on a soft tire so that I can be with the front. Or I thought instantly that this was just brilliant strategy from Marquez, because he's kind of like Acosta, those two never miss a beat on anything, was, wait a second, as dark as these clouds are, if it doesn't rain, this track is going to lose temperature really quickly and allow the soft tire to go the distance with the grip at the beginning and still keep that grip throughout the session. So all of this is to play for as this all starts out. So Martin gets a whole shot, followed by Bagnaia, Quartararo. Then Bagnaia gets by Martin. Zarco shows up in third as they go around, because Quartararo kind of got shuffled to the back a little bit. Marquez was there in fourth, and then you had Quartararo and Mir. And then Marquez went into like attack mode. He got past Zarco. He was right behind Bagnaia and Martin, and those three guys, Bagnaia, Martin, and Marquez, all started to figure out who was going to be fast where. because as it turned out, those few laps into it, there was a waving flag. One, there was a waving white flag, which said that you could change bikes anytime that you wanted to. So now you could change bikes if you needed to. The other thing that happened was there was a rain flag because there was spots of rain. Well, this was like Saxon Ring all over. You put Marquez on a soft tire with potential spotty rain and slick track condition. Holy heck, he's going to go fast. So that part there was brilliant. Then Quartararo, I guess the rain, the spits kind of stopped. And Quartararo made this amazing pass. He went from like third to first at turn three. Yeah, turn three.
Down the outside
and outbroke everybody. Now,
as the rest on the nose, lifting at the back tires as well. So it was the outbreaking of the outbreaking. And this, Jim, was my pass of the week. Yep. That's for
that
sure.
That one was very good as well. Zarco was then wound up having a low side, and he slid out at turn nine. And that was roughly about 18, he had about 10 laps to go at that point. This middle section is actually a little bit blasé. It's like the spring, right? It's getting wound up for what's going to happen at the end. Because after that, Quartararo went really wide at turn three. So Marquez got up to second again, because it was really Bagnaia, Quartararo, Marquez, Martin, Zarco, and Zarco had fallen, then Mir, Miller, and Binder. Now, Martin, Mir, Miller, and Binder are almost like Binder's probably 5 seconds behind this lead group of three. Because when Zarco fell, they kind of lost some time in that. But what happens is the rain flags come again. Now they're waving the rain flags. Quartararo is third, and I think he was settling. Like Quartararo was just going to ride this thing home. He knew Zarco was out. I think it was on his board when they flashed by. Olivero goes down at one, and we're back into this crazy mixed condition thing that's going around. All of a sudden, with five laps to go, Martin and Mir are just bang on the guys out front. And you didn't know, unless you had a stopwatch, that the top three guys were slowing down because the track was wet. The guys behind had the benefit of seeing where these guys were braking and knowing what they were there. They were able to run right back up onto them. Now it's raining. What are you going to do? We've got down to four laps to go. Are you going to trade bikes? That's the question. Do you need to get on Reins or do you not need to be on Reins? Who's going to blink first? Well, Miller and Rins blinked first, and they dove for the pits with five laps to go. They dove into the pits. I thought this was a tactical masterstroke by Miller. Get out, get on the reins, be there before the heavy rain comes when everybody on a slick is going to be going really slow, and you're going to be going really fast because you've already got the slick up to temperature because you're on a not quite really damp track, so you can get heat into the wet a whole lot quicker, right? So this is looking brilliant. Well, as they come around again, Marquez is leading because, you know, he's the master of this mixed condition thing that's going on. And so he dives for the pits. Bagnaia goes with him. And so does Mir. And so does Martin. Okay, they made the decision. It's this time to go. Well, where's Miller? Where's Miller and where's Rins? Are they going to be able to, are they making time enough to pass to get back in front? But then Binder, who was the last guy in that list, doesn't go to the pits. I'm like thinking, Brad, what are you doing, man? If Marquez is coming in, go with him. Do what he does. But he doesn't. He says he's going to stay out. I'm like, oh, that's one lap too long. This is over with. But the guys that went into the pits came out in the same order. So Marquez, who went in first, came out first. Bagnaia came out second. Then you had Martin. Then you had Mir. So that's how they come back out. Well, now it's it's Binder, followed by Aleix Espargaró, Rossi, who has a chance for the 200th podium. Like, talk about the sprinkling of Valentino Rossi magic to get a 200th podium. He was in that spot, but Lecuona was chasing him down hard. And so then there was Alex Marquez, and then it was It was Marini. It was Lekuona. It was Marini. And it was Nakagami were all there. Well, holy crap. Marquez was like 31 seconds behind Bender with like two laps to go. And I'm thinking, can he actually make up that much distance? Because is it possible to make up that much time? But it didn't matter because Marquez went down. If you watch that replay over and over again, you'll realize that was a save. He could have made a save if he had not had his arm and shoulder destroyed, because he was trying to push that back on his elbow and he couldn't do it. So he goes down, and then Bender stays out still. Like, I thought Bender would have came in with three laps to go, you know, maybe stretched it, got the different bike. He was obviously going to go to the end. So he's out front. It's still Espargaró. Like I said, Lekuona has now moved into that. And then at that point, I quit taking notes because, my God, there was so much going on. I couldn't keep track of it. But what happens is that Bender survives on a skating rink, having almost lost the bike at turn, four? Almost at turn four.
Yeah, I think it was four.
He just about went in, just about lost the back end, just about went into the gravel. He went around there. He slowly made it around. It took him 1 minute and 50 seconds to get to the final lap, but he came through to win. Now, quickly, we know he's going to win. He hasn't fallen off. So we're like, well, where's Aleix? Where's Lekuona? Well, all of a sudden, here comes Bagnaia and Martin, who now got the wets working. And they flew through everybody at the 6, 7, and 8 complex. They just cut through everybody like a hot knife through butter. It was amazing to see the speed difference between the two, and it was like I cringed because I could just see one of these guys literally running into the back of one of the guys who were still on slicks. The race ends, and it ends with Brad Binder taking his second victory for KTM. Bagnaia will be second, then Martin. Mir will get fourth. Marini will be fifth. Then Lekuona in sixth. Quartararo, the championship leader, will come home seventh. Rossi would fall all the way back to the eighth in what was incredibly slick conditions. Then Alex Marquez, Aleix, Jack Miller. I don't know why Jack couldn't get the Ducati turned on in the wet there, and he was only 11th quick, having been one of the first guys to get in. Maybe he burned the wets up. I didn't find any information on that one, but it's possible. Then it was Petrucci, Nakagami, Rins, and Mark Marquez actually got 1 point for getting remounting and finishing 15th. Is this not a candidate for race of the decade?
Oh, 100%. Because you had everything. You had fast riders, fast rookies. You had amazing passing. You had bikes working good in the straightaway, bike working good in the turns, bike working good in the brakes. You didn't know who was going to win it. No one got away. It was excitement. And then we're just going to throw a little flag-to-flag in there to boot. Oh, yeah, man. This was wild. This was...
Yeah, it doesn't do... You couldn't do this justice talking about it. Because I've been struggling since I saw it. Was like, how in the world are you going to describe to somebody what the hell happened? Mm. Because it's so Hollywood script, right? Like, it's all every plot twist that you can think of. Because first you're thinking... If anybody was going to take a gamble and go to the end on slicks, you would have thought it had been Marquez, wouldn't you have? I mean, in all honesty, as crazy as he is, you would think, he's going to do it. But it wasn't him. It was the guy that we think of as being way more calculated, and that being Bender, who actually does take the risk and throws caution to the wind to get there. Do you realize they actually, race direction, actually penalized Bender at the end of the race for being too slow?
He ran... Well, I thought it was because he ran wide in the final corner.
Okay.
I thought because he ran it wide and they gave him a...
track limits,
limits, you get the three-second penalty. And so that's why he got the three-second penalty, but he had enough because he was 5 seconds or something like that to keep the win.
Yeah, because his winning margin was 13 seconds. So it must have been almost 16 seconds, and then they added the time penalty to the end there for that, which... It's amazing that he even stayed upright.
Yeah, I don't know how he did it.
Dude, I've done slicks on a mediumly wet track, and it's like literally somebody took and sprayed a fine mist of water on top of ice. That is how it feels.
I'm good.
It's crazy.
Yeah. This is I mean, talk about the most calculated. I mean, let's be real. There's a little bit of risk and reward here. I mean, I don't think Bender was in like, okay, I think I can make it three laps before they catch me. He's like, no, I'm going to take a risk here. And if they catch me, oh well. But the fact that he was able to get out there, because one more lap and he would have been toast. It would have been seventh, eighth place finish easily for him. Let's see, well, he'd been about sixth place, I think, because the only guys that were on the wets were
Benyaya,
Martin,
Mir. Marini's not.
Fabio.
And Fabio 7.
No, Marini was not. I think that's it. I think everybody else will suffer. Yeah, Miller.
Miller.
Which
Miller like and Rins.
When you go back and look what happened there. You know, we haven't talked much. Does Rins have a contract for next year? I feel like he doesn't.
I feel like he doesn't either. I'm not.
He's not having a real mm-mm. good year.
He's being outshined by Mir and by a large margin.
And it's not even like I don't know what it is, because Alex has something going on. Something's going on. He's had a lot of crashes too this year. And I think that comes from pushing it hard because he wants to not be the slowest man on a Suzuki. And it sucks when your teammate's world champion and you're not. But what a funky thing. I think Alex is due for a little reset. I don't think he's like destined to be out of the paddock. There's just no way. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't have a contract, which is something we did this show, we talked about this, and that's how, you know, we did this a couple of months ago. We looked at everybody's contracts, and I just can't remember. I'm pretty sure he has to have a contract, because he would be all up in the Yamaha talks right now.
Let me see, because
they would be stupid not to take a flyer on the Petronas team for Alex Rins. There'd just be no way they wouldn't be looking at him for that ride.
There was I think MotoGP had a list of who's where in the riders for next year.
We did. And I just totally can't remember. That's how, that's asking a lot. I have to remember a lot every day. But I know now that I remember looking at the graphic, all the seats are filled up and Suzuki is full. So he's got a contract.
Yeah. Rins and Mir are confirmed for next year. The 2022 lineup is there. So the only holes that are in the 2022 lineup are who is Partrin Quartararo. I think that's. Draw the line to put Morbidelli right there, right? So then it's like, well, who's on Rossi's team? Don't know. And then who's on the...
Rossi's taking over for Esperanza, right? Or Esperanza, whatever their name is.
Basically, yes.
So he's going to pick up Marini for sure. He's going to be on that team. And who's their other writer right now? It's... Come on, brain.
Keep thinking, because I don't have it.
Come on. If I think about it hard enough, I'm looking at all the writers. There's someone right now. It's just like, you idiot. Like, that's normal. Okay. So we have to go through all the Ducati riders. Here we go. We got, all right. So we got on the factory team, Miller and Benyaya. And we got on the Pramac team, we got Martin and Zarco. And then we've got
Bastianini and
Bastianini
is there with Marini. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So they are the ones that are on that team there. So with that being the case,
you have two for Petronas Sprinta, which is just going to be Sprinta.
Right. So those, and then, so basically we can kind of confirm Rossi, but then we have Leish and Maverick.
That's your Aprilia team.
So the Gresini, they're sticking around with Ducatis, and that's going to be...
That's DG Antonio
and
Bastianini.
Do they have this? Oh, well, then who's going to do with Rossi then? He's got Marini, but who's going to take the second seat?
That's what I'm saying. That's the question. So it's like...
Oh, that's the one. Okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and then you got to throw... You got in here somewhere, you got to figure out, is Aprilia now going to be a Biaggi, Max Delgrotta Aprilia team? Is that the factory team? Because Aprilia is not listed in this list anywhere.
Yeah, I was hearing you guys talking about that in the last podcast. I think it's a good catch. That's a good sponsor. Good, you know, bringing a name to the team.
Bring some money.
Yeah, that would make sense. It would definitely make sense. The only thing that... Where I would be a little skeptical as to maybe why it's not, is because if you were going to stay as the factory team, But with, you know, not call yourself that, then why'd you leave Grassini?
Well, I don't know. It's necessarily if they left Grassini or Grassini left them.
Well, I'm almost positive because Grassini wanted to continue with Aprilia's even after the fact. I'm pretty sure Aprilia wanted to go do their own factory thing. They want full control. And maybe there were some disagreements upon that's why. They're willing to still do a sponsor thing, but they wanted calls on riders and everything else. And Grassini just was like, nah, we're going to run our team. We'll just, you can put your, you know, colors on the side of it or something.
Well, you could always say this. Maybe there's one more team at it. Maybe there's a satellite team for Aprilia on year-old bikes.
I mean, we could, but we're actually finally running into a good problem. We're going to get to the point where there's too many bikes in the grid. I mean, the thing is, we get to watch on a good weekend half a dozen of these guys during the race. Right? We have no idea what's going on past 10th place most time, unless they want to go check on Rossi, and that's going to go away. So it'd be tougher to get sponsored to be like, yeah, we're going to be out there racing for maybe a top 10 if we get on a good weekend. All right. You know, we definitely don't want to dilute the pool, but again, it'd be super cool, I think, if other factories came back and took over seats that were already here. I don't think that's going to happen, though. I don't even know if outside of the factories that would join now, unless there's a severe rule change or a very big change in design philosophy, we're not going to see any of the other factories come to MotoGP until that happens.
There's going to be some big shakeup to get anybody else in there, but who else would really come to play? There's not really another. I mean,
Kawasaki should.
They're having too much fun on World Superbike. Why are they going to do that?
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. They should, right? I mean, they should come over. But that just feels like they went to go play in the minor league. No offense to what is accomplished in World Superbike, but they put their tails between their legs and went to go dominate World Superbike. And it's like, well, nobody else puts the same effort into it. So there you go. I mean, if you really want to come over there and really, you know, tout yourself strong, come play with the big boys. Come over here. And just remember, that's where everybody else's money's at. And then I think you'll see World Superbike even out quite a bit. I mean, it already is, and it's a shame I'm not really watching it this year. I've been looking at the results, so I'm like, okay, this is probably the best year World Superbike has had in a long time. But if we could get Kawasaki back, and I think it'd be way too much of a stretch to even consider BMW at any point coming on over. The Germans are actually condensing all their racing for next year. They're stepping out of just about everything, it feels like. So I think that philosophy is long gone. It feels like racing in Germany is actually going to be very focused, and maybe at the end of the podcast, Jim, we'll have a little time afterwards, talk a little four-wheel, Le Mans, F1, and all that good stuff coming up this weekend. But we're getting sidetracked here, Jim.
What
we got to wrap
new
this bad boy
sidetracking
up.
I mean, come on. That's what we do best.
That's right. And, you know, we actually didn't hang too long there in MotoGP. We went through it. We had a good talk about it, but I think we just have to do the points. Then we kind of roll on out this bad boy.
So Quartararo extends his point lead. He's on 181. Ben Yaya's on 134. I guess really Ben Yaya actually cut a few points out of him because Ben Yaya did finish on second in the podium, and that was definitely not the case. So then Mir is third. You know, he's tied with points for Ben Yaya. So Mir, with the shape-shifting Suzuki, has actually been racing incredibly well. They finally got the shape-shifting bike, and now Mir is actually really defending his championship, to be honest with you. His defense starts now.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, there's a lot of tracks that Mir does pretty well on. He does well.
Well, this is where he came good last year.
The end, he came good. Yeah. Well, they're going to go to COTA, and he finished on his only podium in Moto2 was at COTA in there. So he goes well there. So that's there. He goes well at Portimao. So they're going to be there twice. So anything's possible at that point. You know, this isn't over, but let's face the facts. Quartararo has at least two fingers on the cup, but it's going to take a lot to pry it from him. Zarco,
I don't know. I don't know if he's got enough of a points gap to say that just yet. And we know Fabio can go cold, so we gotta wait. He's looking good, but
yeah. But I look at it this way.
I will say he's got two fingers on the BMW pole award this year for sure.
But I look at it this way. The Yamaha was not expected to be any good at all on this track, and he wasn't supposed to be anywhere near the podiums. He was. That's a victory for Quartararo. And if you look at this from last year, this is where Quartararo just started to fall off the map. Well, he hasn't fallen off the map yet. True. So I'm going with it.
And he's been quick in all conditions, which was not something you could say about the Yamaha a couple of years ago.
Yamaha's greatly improved. Quartararo has greatly improved. It's not, you know, again, anything can happen and probably will happen because this is MotoGP and it is crazy, but it is amazing.
Jim,
but look at that. 2, 3, and 4. That's Benyaya, Mir, and Zarco. They're on. Benyaya and Mir are tied at 134 points, and Zarco is only 2 points behind them on 132.
And Zarco coughed it up.
Zarco wouldn't have fallen off. I bet Zarco has ruined the fact that he did that.
Because now he's in a battle just for the freaking podium this year. In the championship for 2 and 3, when he had a nice little sizable gap back to Bagnaia, and he was not too far behind Quartararo, one bad week from Quartararo, and he's back in the championship lead. But obviously I'm not going to try to pick this guy's skill apart, but it looked like he just wasn't able to accept where he was going to be at this weekend, and he pushed a little too hard in that front and washed it out.
I think it's a little hard to watch your rookie teammate win a race.
Yes, that would be difficult.
Look at how fast it is.
Ask Thomas Bargrove.
But Martin is noticeably faster through that 7-8 switchback than any other Ducati, and it's the way Martin rides. And I think that's got everybody freaking out, because if Martin's that good here, I expect with the big straightaways at Silverstone and the quick directions to, you know, Cops, Maggots, Beggets, I look for Martin to be fast there, probably fastest Ducati there. We shall see. It's going to be interesting.
It's going to be a good race. Yes, it is. Yes, it is, because everyone's got a shot. There's something for everyone at that track with the way the bikes are going right now.
It's all going to work. Anyway, I think that kind of sums it all up, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that gets us through. I definitely feel it. Well, I mean, we could sit here literally keep going, picking apart that race, but honestly.
Just watch it.
If you want more information, exactly, go watch it. Go
we told you what
it.
To look for.
It's going to be good for you. That's right.
All right, so they're...
But it's even worth watching the play shoot.
There is a weekend off because they are going to Silverstone in 2 weeks, so look for that. If you want to tell us how crazy we were and how wrong we were about what we said about this race, feel free to do that. We welcome the good, the bad, and the ugly. Just send your email to motopod@motopodcast.com. It'll go to all the hosts. Everybody will chime into it. Everybody usually gives a response. And if it's really good and brings up a good discussion, well, it'll probably make it on the show for next week. If you guys want to get a hold of me, you can do it by looking up Twitter, looking up at MotoRGV on Twitter and Instagram. Skyler, I know you're at SkylerV28 on both Twitter and Instagram. I'm sure you wouldn't mind if a fan or two got in contact with you as well, but don't expect him to be right back on that one.
I'm never back on any of them, but maybe towards the end of this year, I'll be having some other stuff to announce where I'll be more readily available, but we'll see how things go.
That's it for the show, people. Thank you, Skyler, for coming on and doing this one with me. I know Rich appreciates it very much that you were able to fill in for him. And hopefully everybody, hope you all enjoyed this one. Hopefully Silverstone will be just as good. Be sure to watch. Let's see what Marquez does. Does he need a tow? Does he not need a tow? Let's see where Quartararo is. Is he in the front? And then let's keep an eye on Martin to see where he is, because I think Martin's going to go really fast there. And who knows, there could be British summer, means it's probably going to be raining at Silverstone, so it could be a wet, could be another flag to flag. This one's going to be wild. Again, we're in a big draft track, so let's see where Acosta shows up too. And hopefully Gardner and Lowe's can have a run for the front. I'd love to see Sam win in front of the hometown crowd, which would be really good. But I think that's going to do it for us. We're going to get out of here. I think we'll stay on and talk a little four-wheel stuff. But that's it for the show, guys. And we'll talk to you after Silverstone. See ya.